Hello and welcome to the return of the BOAG World Show, the longest running web design podcast where we look at user experience design, conversion optimization and working in the web. I'm Paul BOAG and joining me as always is Marcus Lillington. Hello Marcus, how are you doing?
I'm all right. The longest web design podcast in the world.
The longest, what, in, with each a bit of a episode?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
We just waffle for ages. Hey, do you remember we did was it a 24 or 12 hour one?
I think it was a 12 hour one.
That
I
don't think we went all night. No, we didn't go all night.
We did that in the old office, didn't we, in the barn?
And
people joined us from all around the world back in the days of fame and notoriety, Paul.
Yeah. When actually people listened to the show.
Yeah.
Oh, those were the days. Although it's a lot less pressure now, isn't it? Because, you know, doesn't really matter what we say. We could say any old crap, nobody would notice.
Well, wait until you do. That's the thing. You say something that no one will pay the slightest bit of attention until you say something wrong, Paul. Say something bad that you shouldn't say. It's all right, I can edit it all out, Paul.
I'm sure you can.
I normally giggling away when I'm editing it, going,
oh, Paul, you can't say that.
Shall I keep that in? Oh, I don't know. Anyway, yes, go on. Introduce us. What are we talking about today?
Right, so we're talking about the dangers of perfectionism in this week's show. Mm-hmm. We're also going to look at the pros and cons of various AI platforms because those, now we've got past the kind of we're all doomed and going to lose our job phase. We're going to look at which ones to use in which situation. And we're going to look at why empathy is key to us as UX professionals. So that's the plan for the day.
Empathy and AI, all in the same show.
It seems like a contradiction, doesn't it? And possibly it is.
I think AI is evil. I've gone more the other way.
Oh, have you really?
I'm just making it up to make it sound like it. I don't really use it, but we'll come on
to
that.
Do you not?
No.
I use it loads, but we'll come to that in a minute. Yeah. Before that, I want to tell you about a cool little fun thing I did last Saturday. I went and tried on the Apple Vision Pro.
Yeah, I've looked at this and thought, what is it?
What's the point of it?
Yes, exactly.
I know, and that's going to be their number one problem. I simply did it because I knew we were going to Southampton shopping, right, with my mother-in-law, and I thought, well, while I'm there, rather than wandering around with my mother-in-law that moves at like a snail's pace, I'll shoot off for a little bit and have a play in the Apple store. And boy, it's amazing. It really,
really?
No, okay, caveats here. Yeah. Caveat number one is it's not £3,000 amazing, right?
That's all Apple products, but pretty much.
Okay, that hasn't stopped me buying them in the past. I wouldn't spend $3,000 on this one. No way. Caveat number two is too heavy at the moment. It would get annoying after any length of time. So that's caveat number two.
So was it make you give you a neck ache or what?
No, your forehead gets marked and you feel a bit hot and sweaty after a while wearing it.
Okay.
So it's a little bit heavy, a little bit uncomfortable. So I won't wear it long term. But what an amazing piece of technology. It created, because I mean, I've used VR so many times over the years. Right back, the first time I used VR was in 1995, I worked out, where it was all just blocks. Mm. This thing is next level. This thing is totally incredible, totally immersive. I'm very jaded over these kinds of technologies. Not as much as I am. No. Oh, I'll come to, we'll come to practicalities of what you would use it for, if anything, in a minute. But in terms of pure impression, it blows you away. And don't get me wrong, I wasn't interested in this as a product. But when you actually try it, you go, it was a bit like when the first iPhone came out. It's like, no, this is the future, right? Not in that form factor, not in that size, not at that price point, but as a proof of concept, it's the future. Things like the cinema, when you go and watch a piece of media, right? I mean, it's better than the cinema. Way better than the cinema. You know, there's no sticky floors. There's no people sitting in front of you. The screen is crystal clear, as sharp as anything, blows you away. The life, the immersive 3D video, you know, I mean, you instinctively react to it. I caught myself reaching out, which I've never done before in a virtual reality thing. There was one point where there were basketball players and he passed the ball towards me. And I freaked out. I jumped back, which I never do in these kinds of things. It was a level of fidelity that I've never experienced. The user interface was incredible as well. Really well thought through. A little bit niggly at times. But the bit that really got me was when you started to put windows out for productivity purposes. You became surrounded by your own work. Right. You know, it was there just at your fingertips in front of you the whole time. I had screens all around me. They were really high resolution screens. I mean, what made me want to buy it? And admittedly, this is an incredibly specific use case that applies to nobody else in the world, probably, but me. I spend half my time in a motorhome, right, where I've got one tiny laptop screen and that's it. You know, that's all I work with. Put these things on. And you're surrounded by as many screens and as many apps and as many places as you want. And they are indistinguishable from reality, right? They're as sharp as I can see them. And that was with just using their off-the-shelf lenses rather than lenses that were made specifically for my prescription.
That was my next question. So, yeah, so you just wear it with your glasses?
No, you don't. They take that. That brings me on to the experience itself of going through this demo. It's very, very slick. The whole thing from the moment you arrive to the moment you leave is very, very slick. And they say, can I borrow your glasses? And they take the glasses out. They take them over to a machine. So they don't need you to come with your prescription because who knows what their prescription is. They put it in a machine which scans your glasses, works out the prescription, and then that goes into the back office. Right. And then you also use your own phone to take a face scan so they can find the best fit to your face. That goes into the back office and then they come out with your Apple Pro on a platter, you know, and it's all ready to go. And with the right lenses in and the right face mask and all of the rest of it.
So let me get this right. So if I've got these things on, I could be sat at my desk.
Yeah.
Do I not need a monitor anymore?
No.
I can still type on my keyboard down here, but I can see it coming up on the things around.
Literally, they don't show this in their demo, which that frustrated me a bit.
That's pretty cool if that's the case. That's a good thing.
Yeah, yeah. You're open, basically, if you had your Mac closed in front of you, you open up your Mac, and as you open it up, it goes, oh, you're wearing Apple Vision. And immediately takes the screen on the Mac and projects it up above your screen. And then you can add other screens and other apps on it if you want to. And for me, that's the number one use, you know. But at the moment, the thing is too heavy. You couldn't wear it for 8 hours, right? Yeah, and of course, it's got pass-through, so you can see the rest of your office environment if you want to, or you can dial it away and it goes away. And you suddenly find yourself sitting on the moon or on a mountaintop or wherever else you want to be where you work. So it is utter witchcraft. It really is. But the problem that I had with going through the experience is it was a bit Americanized. There were times when you sat there and went, no, this isn't working in England. So when you arrived, I was greeted by two different people, doesn't matter why. They'd obviously been given the same line to say, right? Both of them said exactly the same line. And both of them said to me, are you excited about trying Apple Vision or having your Apple Vision experience today? And it was like, oh, for crying out loud. No, it's stop a piece it. Of tech. Yeah, stop it. And then at the end of the presentation, it was like, and congratulations for completing your Apple Vision Pro demo today. And it's like, why is that a source of congratulations? I've just sat here and looked at some shit, you know? So that kind of thing annoyed me a little bit. But other than that, it was it really got me, yeah. I'm afraid. And that, but then, but you going back to what you said, your reaction right at the beginning, that's the problem that they face, that you only want it when you've tried it.
Mm.
I had no interest in buying it before I went in, and now I want it. I'm not going to buy it because I don't have £3,000 sitting around for a toy. What is a toy? Right, okay.
Let's put a bet on this one then, Paul, shall we?
Right, I'm willing to put money that I won't buy it until version 2.
All right, yeah, I'll go for a bet on that, because I was going to say this year you will buy it at some point.
Oh, no, I won't buy it this year. I'm willing to put £100 on that.
Oh, that's too much money. We'll have a fiver. That's the standard bet for anything.
A fiver, is it?
Yeah.
Don't know. I don't take part. All right. I don't usually bet. I will bet you a fiver that I won't buy it this year.
Yeah. All right. Okay.
You're going to lose a fiver, I'm afraid to say.
Well, I'm still not convinced, but there you go.
Are you not?
No.
Well, it helps that my business isn't making a lot of money at the moment, Marcus. That stops me buying toys that I shouldn't.
Yeah, fair point.
Anyway, we should talk about other stuff.
I know we should, but I just want to ask one more question. You said,
yeah, of course.
You said it's going to be the future of watching a film or something like that. That's the one that I have a problem with. Not
why
working.
That?
Working, fair enough, because it is very much, you know, I'm doing my stuff in my own environment, even though saying that, a lot of people don't. They're in an environment with lots of other people.
Yeah.
But sitting in and watching a film of an evening with your partner and your kids and all that kind of thing, if you're all sat there with these things in your head,
that's
it's a bit weird.
Yeah, that's a fair comment. That was a bit of hyperbole on my part. Certainly for things that you don't watch with other people,
sure.
Then I would say, you know, I would certainly never go to the cinema by myself anymore. There's just no need. I would go for a night out with Kath still, you know, and I can understand it from that point of view. And equally, if you're watching something with someone else, even if you could link the two in some way and see one another, I think I'd just settle for a screen.
But then I guess if it was no more than a pair of glasses, then that might be a bit different.
Yeah, it might be. Yeah.
It's weird, isn't it? I don't know. I think you're probably right that it is the future, but it needs to be stop being this huge thing
that
you put in your head.
Yeah. You give it another, and that's really what Apple was doing, I think, was putting a kind of stake in the ground and saying, look, this is where we're going and what we're trying to do. And so it's only really very early adopters. I mean, I consider myself an early adopter, but obviously I can't buy it now because otherwise I lose a fiver.
Exactly.
On top of the £3,000 that I'd have to spend.
Well, yeah, fair.
Before we really should get on with the show itself, but before we do, there is a couple of bits of housekeeping. One is I did want to remind people, if any of you are new to the show or maybe just don't remember, we do have a really good Slack community where we all kind of hang out and talk crap. At the moment, we're just all complaining about how hot it is. So if you want to be a part of that and just hang out with us, then you're welcome to do so at boag.world/slacking. Also, if you're an agency owner, I have just launched something that I've been thinking about for blooming years, and I've only just got round to it, which is a kind of a group coaching / community / service for people who are freelancers and agency owners, a place we can learn from one another. We can talk about the challenges of, running an agency and dealing with clients and all that kind of horrible stuff. And if you're interested in that, you'll find that at boag.world/academy. And you might want to check that one out. That you won't find Marcus in that one because it's a paid thing and he would have to give me money, and that just isn't going to happen. I ought to give you a free access to it, really.
That was my next line, Paul. I'm just waiting for my invitation.
Waiting for the invitation and it hasn't come. Oh, I'm sorry, Marcus. Finally, final bit of housekeeping. He says moving on without actually committing himself to anything.
Yes, I think you just did.
Yeah, I said I should give you a free. Yeah, I didn't say I would. I would very much like to include user questions in this in these podcasts. So if you ever want to drop either of us an email with questions or topics to discuss, send me an email to paul@boagworld.com and marcus@headscape.co.uk. Is that
yep, that,
right?
That'd get to me. Yeah, definitely.
Cool.
That would be great. Yes, a few user-generated questions would be spot on. We could just make them up. We used to do that, didn't we? And this is Dave from Ipswich with blah, 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 blah.
People never know. Also, don't forget, you've got to send Marcus jokes as well.
Yes,
which we do. We've got a whole joke slack. You haven't got a joke, have you?
No, I will have one very soon. Very soon. Don't worry. You carry on talking, Paul. Shh.
So we have a Slack channel dedicated to this as well. So if you join our Slack group, you get to see all the jokes that Marcus rejected. Anyway, let's move on. If you want the show notes for today, it will be boag.world/002. I wanted to start off by talking about apps and my apps of the week. I thought this time I'd compare various large language models, AI services. There's three that I use a lot. And so I thought I would share how I use different ones. For a long time, my default one used to be ChatGPT.
I've used that one, Paul.
You've used that one, yeah.
Yeah.
So chatgpt.com. Really good. Love it. Still a good, solid app. Not the one that I use all the time anymore, and I'll come on to that in just a second. But what it is great at, which my alternative doesn't do, is analyzing data sets. So if ever you've done any usability testing, if you've got an Excel document, anything that you don't want to pour through endlessly, then throwing it into ChatGPT is absolutely excellent. It's really good at giving you feedback and telling you what was in that. So that's the one that I tend to now use primarily for data sets. Anything beyond that, and I'm probably using Claude AI, which is available at claude.ai. Now, the reason that I like Claude is it has what's called a very large...
Much better name, Paul.
Much better name. Yeah, that's true. I agree with that. Can't fault you on that.
More trustworthy, because that's my issue, is that I don't really trust it.
ChatGPT, so it doesn't sound like a person, does it? Well, Claude sounds nice.
Or it'll give you this good feedback, and I'm always like, do I believe this?
With data sets, you can check it, right?
Yeah, I know.
And I do compare these models. I mean, there's a lot of comparisons out there about how good. And the reason I've moved to Claude AI is because it is comparably good as ChatGPT. But it's got a couple of things that make it unique that I like. First, it's got a much larger context window. What that means is it's got a much bigger memory. And so as a result, you could do things like upload very large documents. So, for example, I uploaded my entire last book, Click, right? And it only used half of the memory that it's got for the whole book, right?
Yeah.
And I did, because I was suspicious, like you, Marcus, I did what's called a needle in the haystack test, where I asked it to find a specific piece of information out of that whole book, and it did it successfully, right? Yeah. So that's really good. And then it combines that with something it calls projects. And with each project, you can create projects and then just throw in a load of data that you want to include in that project, right? And then it'll draw on that stuff you've uploaded to inform the answers. So one thing, for example, that I've done is one of the things that frustrates me about using large language models is they don't sound like me if I get them to write something for me, right?
Yeah.
So what I've done is I've created a project, uploaded a shit ton of my previous writing.
Yeah.
So now I can say, make this sound more like me, you know, the stuff that's in the project. So that kind of thing. So that's Claude. The one you're going to really like, Marcus, bearing in mind what you just said about not trusting it, is my third tool, which is called Perplexity. Have you come across Perplexity?
Never heard of it.
No, that's fine. Perplexity.ai. Now, what's great about Perplexity is that it's brilliant for searching the web, right? Forget Google. Never use Google again, right?
Okay.
Go to Perplexity, ask the very specific question that you want, right? So, for example, one that I often ask is, give me some statistics to back up whatever this random opinion is that has popped into my head, right? Because I'm terrible at making sweeping generalizations with no data to back myself up. So I will basically ask Perplexity. It goes off, looks at the internet, gives me the statistics, but it also gives me the references. So I can click on each one of those references, go through and see where it's come from, right? So that's, you know, that gets around your, should I trust this or not kind of thing.
The citation is you, Paul, isn't it? Saying what you said earlier, you know, 10 years ago.
I have had that once. Yes, it did happen to me once.
Brilliant. This has got nothing to do, but it's just got to do with AI, is I find AI images really creepy. And I don't know whether it's, because I think AI is a bit creepy and therefore images created by AI are creepy, or just they really are. You can always see, it's like, that's an AI image every time. And apparently you can do it with music as well now. Certainly younger people can go, that's AI music. Like I'm about 50-50.
You won't get it right every time with images, because there will be ones that have slipped by you that are AI and you thought weren't.
You are actually AI generated. The real Paul Berg is in the Caribbean lying on a beach.
Marcus, you know that's not true. Now, the listener doesn't know, but you know it's not true, because would I have created an AI avatar with a massive spot on my chin? I wouldn't have done that, would I?
More authentic, mate.
Oh, yeah. a lot of it does come. Yeah, sometimes AI images do look fake. They look a little bit too perfect, but you can, with good prompting, get around that, right?
Yeah, okay. I just see it so much everywhere.
Yeah, it's people just being lazy, basically.
Weird fingers and things like that. There is a style to AI generated images. They're like too colourful, or there's a sort of monochromeness, even though they're still, I can't quite describe it, but you get that's an AI image. It looks a bit weird.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's not describable. But you can, if you know what you're doing, you can get rid of that.
Right.
But that's why I tend to, I mean, I use AI images all the time, but I go for ones that are, don't try and be photorealistic.
I think
that's where it's when you're trying to create something real, you have to put a lot of work in to make it look, you know, real.
That makes sense.
You know? Mm. And there are certainly tales with it. And it's the same with the writing as well. It does write in a certain style as well, that you have to work hard to get it away from that style. So you make good points.
Okay.
I mean, where I use it most is for research, brainstorming, that kind of thing, not really for generating full designs or full anything of, you know, significance.
But, I've legal stuff. You know, you can look up T's and C's, you know, what does this policy mean and that kind of thing. And it's really helpful from that point of view, because it'll give me a bullet point list, but summarizing blah, 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 blah. But again, you go, is this really right? But yeah, I'll go with it, because I would have believed Google.
Well, what's an interesting one that I had was, we did our first academy call, basically as part of the agency academy thing that I was mentioning a minute ago. We do a weekly call, and we had a really good chat for about an hour. So I took the transcript of that, and I said to AI, extract half a dozen kind of tangible actions people could take out of this. And it did an amazing job. It's so good at things like that. It's like any tool, you need to use it sparingly and in the right way, don't you? You know,
absolutely. I'm just, you know, it's part of my job to be a Luddite and things like that. So
you do it so well. That's what impresses me. It's almost like it's genuine.
Yeah. What's next, Mr. Paul?
Right, yes. Should we talk about the kind of tips and advice section? We did say we were going to alternate with this, and I didn't even ask you whether you wanted to do something.
I don't think we went as often as alternate.
Oh, you would just, do it when you felt like it, because you're a wuss that's not willing to commit to regularly doing something.
All right, I promise I'll do it sometime. Soon. Well, you know,
fair enough.
There's an outstanding invite, you know, that I'm waiting on.
before. Oh, I see. I see what's going on there. No, I'm not. I'm not being bullied and blackmailed into this. See, now when I give you a free invite to it, it's not going to look like some wonderful, nice, caring gift to you to show how much I appreciate you. It's just going to look like you've manipulated me into it. So I'm stuffed now. I'm backed into a corner.
I'll only say nice things about you, Paul. Uh-huh. Promise.
I don't believe that. Right, anyway, let's talk about our subject for today. I wanted to talk a bit about perfectionism and how I wrote about this ages ago in our newsletter, and it was like it actually got a bit of a reaction. People didn't really like me talking in this way, probably because of the wording that I used. I talked about how good enough is good enough by definition, right? That instead of constantly trying to deliver the absolute best we possibly can for our clients and stakeholders, we should deliver good enough, right? And that perfectionism is like this trap that we fall into, especially I find amongst younger designers, where we have this natural desire to polish and polish and polish and improve and improve and improve anything we do. And I do think this applies beyond design as well. And that ultimately that can end up hindering rather than helping what we're delivering. And the problem is of course that perfection is impossible to achieve. I mean, it's not like we're ever going to meet perfection, because perfection is very much a subjective thing. And even going, we should do the best possible thing, isn't always practical. Because best possible within what context are we talking here? The best possible within your ability, or the best possible within the constraints that are placed upon you? And often I see people doing way more work than they need to. And it, you know, for example, people often over-engineer things. I see this all the time, both in kind of applications and designs and all kinds of stuff. We end up spending unnecessary time, which either comes out your bottom line if you're an external person, or alternatively, you're costing your employer money and time for you to over-engineer something that people don't need and that actually is more than is really required. And I think a lot of it is basically an excuse to procrastinate rather than deliver. It almost comes out of a fear of delivery. So increasingly, I've become a fan of this idea of good enough, you know, both in design, but in the stuff I write and put into the world. Also, even in like user testing and that kind of stuff, good enough to get us through, good enough to move us forward. And that actually maintaining momentum is more important in a lot of cases than actually just creating perfection. And really, as long as it's good enough to meet user needs and business goals effectively, it doesn't need to be any better than that. So it's about balancing efficiency and functionality. And this idea of perfectionism as well, I think, can make you too rigid in the way that you operate and inflexible. You know, you're always arguing with other stakeholders or complaining to the developer that that's 3 pixels out and all of that kind of crap. Because, you know, we become obsessed with realizing our vision exactly. And also, it doesn't leave a lot of room for adaptability and going, okay, circumstances have changed and we maybe need to compromise. And, you know, this feature or design approach or whatever that we've come up with actually might be not as practical in the real world because of coding or whatever else. And if you get sucked into this idea of perfectionism, it just leads to this, you know, never-ending projects, which, you know, and you got get caught in revision cycles, and you lose sight of probably the thing that's most important, which is getting to market with that thing, right? Getting it out into the world, because basically until it's in the world, it's useless. It's not a thing. It's just a sunk cost either to you or to the organization. So, yeah, I guess what I'm really trying to encourage people to do is look carefully at balancing quality with the practicalities of what you're producing, and to recognize that really creating, doing it, being as effective as possible within the constraints and budgets is the goal, rather than best practice, rather than perfectionism. And just encouraging people to take a bit more of a realistic approach, especially in design, because this seems to be like the biggest sink. I mean, you must find it a bit in music as well, of like, when is a piece of music done? At some point, you've got to put it down, haven't you?
I'll come on to that.
Oh, he's been making... I've seen him scribbling away. He's been making notes of how to pick apart my argument. Go on.
No, that's all. This is so... You're setting yourself up for me to you know, Headscape, high quality, Paul Bauag, shoddy. You know. Not at all. I agree with this pretty much wholeheartedly. If you take it literally, good enough means that you have reached a point of... where something is done. The only time I was thinking that maybe you might want to think a bit beyond that, but this could actually be part of the scope anyway, is if you're thinking about reusability in the future or making sure that you're not reinventing the wheel, that kind of thing. Yeah, thinking wider than the task that you're actually on.
That's a very good point, actually.
Not perfectionism, though. That's just ensuring that you're not focusing just on this one single deliverable and I've got to get this out and it's done. Because it might be, you might actually be giving yourself problems in the future by going down that route. But generally speaking, absolutely. And in music, 100%. I've got pieces of music I started 25 years ago. and that no one has ever heard.
Yeah.
You know? And I'll go it's back wasted. and I'll fiddle around with it again and go, okay. Or then I'll listen to that version 2 years later. And go,
yeah.
Oh, no, I don't like that as much. Yeah. You know, so absolutely. I mean, and I think in art, if we can call music art, and maybe the, you know, the aspects, the closest to art in web design is the kind of setting of the aesthetics, is where you can fall over with this a little bit too much. You've got that constant feeling like it could be better. And I think it's because one of the problems with this is we want our peers to rate what we do.
Mm. Yeah.
We certainly don't want them criticizing it.
Yeah.
Because so therefore it's like, is it good enough for my peers? That's probably, that's when we're getting down to the actual detail of it. It's like kind of, the nub of the issue. It's like good enough for market, as the word that you use, or good enough for me to win an award or rapture from my fellow designers. And that's what I think you mean, really.
It is. And it's not, that's not a good enough reason to do it, is it?
Not when someone's paying you, no.
No, absolutely. And I also think that raises an interesting one about user testing as well. It's like, you know, if somebody is paying you to deliver... I hear the argument saying, well, you know, we've got to test this super thoroughly because, you know, we've got to make the best user experience possible. And our number one goal is to create an outstanding user experience. No, it's not. Mm. We create an outstanding user experience in order to convince people or to keep people subscribed and you know, whatever else the call to action is for our business. It's a means to an end, a great user experience. And that sounds cynical to say, but the truth is the user isn't paying you, right? They're not the one that's asking for this thing to be built or created. It's the company who are footing the bill. And so it's got to meet user needs and it's got to meet business needs. And to meet business needs, it needs to be as cost effective as possible. It needs to make as much profit for as little cost. Now, there's a balance to be struck there, because if you think too short term in it, then you just screw the user over and churn through them and get the next one. But if you care about things like lifetime customer value and that kind of stuff, you know, then really a good enough approach stands you in good stead, I think. Anyway, yep. I'm sure people would disagree with me. That's what the internet's for. Right. Let's talk about interesting read of the week. Okay. I wanted to share with you a post that I really enjoyed. You can check it out at boag.world/002-1. And it's a post about empathy in UX design. Caught my eye. I don't know the author. I don't know anything about it. But I really enjoyed it as a read, because this idea of empathy is absolutely at the heart of pretty much anything that we do in our field. So whether you're a marketer, a salesman, a designer, developers, they get off a little bit, but you've still got to empathize with your colleagues. You know, anybody that's shaping a product or a product, in fact, even developers, they don't get out of it as well, because, you know, they can create performance issues or security issues because they don't care enough about what the user thinks or feels. So everybody needs to be focused on this idea of empathy and being able to put yourself into the shoes of users, to understand your users, to empathize with your colleagues, to connect with even your managers and be able to work with them, and to engage with stakeholders, you know, all requires empathy. And I would say that if I could go back and talk to my younger self, who Marcus remembers, that would be the one skill that I would slap me around the head and say, you need to focus on this. Stop focusing so much on technology or design or that kind of stuff. Get those soft skills. Get that ability to empathize, and don't be such a dick, because I was a dick.
I'm not to describe you, Paul, but I've used the word wanker in my notes here. if you're not an empathetic person, you're more likely to be a wanker, basically.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And that's just like, well, that's not good, generally, unless it's something you aspire to.
here's the interesting thing. I think from a career perspective, right, that honing those skills of empathy are so important from a career perspective, because not only are they skills that don't change, technology and design trends, they come and go, while empathy remains forever, you know, or people remain forever, but also beyond a certain point, those soft skills like empathy become more important. As you become a manager or a team leader or anything like that, you're doing less hands-on work and you're doing more working with people. And so from a career career progression perspective, it's really, really important as well.
This is maybe getting a little bit political as well, socio-political. We are seeing more and more of empathy is important generally and in your job and things like that. And that has thrown up the opposite. We see a lot more of sort of anti-empathy, anti-woke, anti-weak, particularly from kind of, in very big air quotes, strong men. And the quotes are extremely important, because they are probably the weak ones who are unable to live in a world with others who don't see things the way they do.
Yeah.
It relates to something that I've got a bee in my bonnet about. I think I mentioned it briefly in our other podcast. People ghosting you. You know, you can make contact with somebody, and I'm not talking about cold emailing or anything. That's fine. Ignore those. I'm talking about someone sent someone has sent you an email, Paul, saying, I've got a question. Can you come back to me? And or that's a bad example. But basically, somebody's made contact with you. You've come back and given them something, asked them a question, and that's it. You never hear from them again.
Yeah.
That kind of, and that's, you know, classic ghosting. And I think it's a lot worse now than it was, say, 20 years ago when I started doing this job. And I think it's connected with what I was just talking about, this kind of anti-weak thing where super efficiency, you know, I don't have to get back to that person, so I won't, which is kind of the complete opposite of empathy as we're talking. It's going, but I don't know. It's.
Yeah. Where I got stuck was I felt a need to say, well, how do you improve your empathy skills? Right. And the thing that initially popped into my mind was it's almost something that comes with age. As you've experienced more stuff in your life, as you interact with more people, you become more empathetic by default. Well, some people do, some people don't. But, you know, that's a big factor in it. But I was struggling to think, the only other thing I could think that is you need to expose yourself to lots of different people, not expose yourself, that sounds terrible, but you need to interact with a lot of different types of people,
That different backgrounds, different cultures, all that kind of thing. Yeah, and the more you do that, the more you're going to realize how unimportant you are. How different everyone is, and also, you know, that. And it's just to finish off my thought about what I was saying there, it is completely inefficient and it makes no sense whatsoever to not just interact with people just to say thanks but no thanks or whatever. Because if you ever have to deal with that person again, they're not going to blank you or ignore you.
I can give you a real tangible example of this from as we're talking about back in the day when actually we mattered as a podcast, you know, people would, I would regularly get emails from students asking for advice and people saying, you know, and that would have been classic. Oh, I'm too important and too busy to respond to these people. I'm not going to extract any money from them. They're scummy students. Mm. But the truth is, a lot of those people have since hired me. Because they've gone on and got jobs and they've remembered the podcast and they've remembered those interactions. So it's always, always worth investing in people.
Exactly. Being nice, generally, as long as you're not, don't let people walk all over you. You know, polite, empathetic will pay dividends.
Mm. And even going back to what we were talking about last week, you know, we were talking about traditional usability testing compared to all of these new ones. And I was going, oh, yes, you could do unfacilitated remote testing and you could do this and you could do that. The only downside of that is it creates a divide between you and the users you're trying to reach, right? Because you're not sitting front, you know, facing them face to face. And often I think that's the big problem that marketers face, that they're trying to sell to people that they haven't personally interacted with. Right. You know, maybe even if they, well, we did user research and got personas. Yeah. Did you? Or did you hire an agency to do that for you who did the interacting? Did you sit down with these people in person and get to know them?
Yeah.
You know, so there's that element as well. Anyway, we'll end up sounding like grumpy old men if we go on too long like this.
I think the general message here is that we're quite the opposite of that, you know, but be empathetic, care. And it'll make your life, full stop, easier. It, you know, but certainly your job.
I can mention one person in particular that I empathised with this week, and I really made a connection with them. And it was a guy called Martin who I can't remember whether he emailed me or spoke to him on Slack, and he said, "I used to listen to the podcast back in the day. I am, and I quote, a survivor of Marcus's jokes." See that nice transition that I made there?
I see where we're going with this one, Paul.
Yeah. So yes. He did. He made me laugh out loud with that one. A survivor of Marcus's jokes.
Right. You ready, Paul?
Yeah, I am.
So what did the drummer call his twin daughters?
What did the drummer call his twin daughters?
Anna 1, Anna 2.
The trouble is, I think there is something that's shifted, right? Because I am now a dad, right? Yeah, yeah. When we started with this, I wasn't. Now I'm finding your jokes funny.
I've always been a fan of the dad joke, very much. And a one, it's and a two. Very good. And a Come two. On. That's yes. I've started off with two good ones in a row. I have to do a really crap one next week.
Yeah, because they were a bit too funny. So, yeah, that's the problem. All right, well, that's everything, guys. Thank you very much for joining us. Just to remind you that if you want to access the show notes, for example, get access to the article I talked about or any of the apps or anything like that, then go to boag.world/002. And that's it. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.
Bye.